Hello and welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report. Another week, still me, it's the same me. It's also, it's the same Francesca, or is it the same Francesca? Is there something subtly different about her? A certain glow. Francesca Fiorentini, explain yourself.
I like that you say glow. I was on the watch list and JR was like, she's eating for two. And I'm like, oh, thanks.
She's a machine.
The Frantifa is gonna have little Frantifa mini soldiers, super mini soldiers, as we've discussed.
Infantry is what we call it. But anyway, that's exciting. That's exciting. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun. Yes, everyone. I'm registered at all of the major baby. No, I don't know where I'm registered.
Is registering a thing still?
It's a thing. I guess so. Yeah. I'm like, aren't there enough kids that we can just. Or just send me hand-me-downs. If anyone has a snoo, I hear it's a thing. I'm not sure what it's for.
Banana.
Yes. But anyway, you know, I hope to birth, you know, just the rebellious generation, also fine with eating, you know, like small rodents and roadkill, as we will need to have, you know, survival skills in the coming climate apocalypse.
It's like a John Connor situation, but it's the child who shall bring down capitalism.
Something like that. Exactly.
Cool. Cool. We need it. Well, look, we've been wanting some support. So the progressive movement is about to be one person bigger and we could use it anyway.
We have to birth them at this point because the right is not coming over to our side.
Exactly. And they are having kids, which I find to be surprising. It's really a battle between their ideological opposition to birth control versus the fact that most rational humans wouldn't want to sleep with any of them. But apparently the lack of birth control is winning out. And so we need to make sure that our numbers are just as robust.
Yes.
But anyway, glad to have you here as always. And glad to have all of you here. Thank you for being here. Those of you who have already liked the stream on YouTube, shared it perhaps on Twitch. How nice of you to do that. And that's not subtle pressure or anything. Anyway, we've got a lot that we're gonna be talking about through the course of our show, including our Monday menace. I think you can probably guess who it's gonna be today. Some election results coming out of France, very exciting. And Carrie Lake, hardcore anti-vaxxer, anti-masker, or is she? This Trump favorite candidate might be hiding a dark past of accepting science, and we're gonna reveal it. So look forward to all that and more as we jump into this. And if you want to send us comments, sweet super chats, all that, that would be great. Shout out to the podcast listeners. We don't talk about you enough, but we absolutely love you. Feel free to leave reviews of the podcast and I'll start integrating those into our little social breaks as well. Would love to see some reviews from those listening on the podcast. With that said, Francesca, are you and the little one ready to talk about some news?
One of us is.
Yeah, I'm expecting commentary out of both. But anyway, with that said, let's jump into this.
And I was told by the banks that if I did not agree to settle with the SEC, that the banks would cease providing working capital and Tesla would go bankrupt immediately. So that's like having a gun to your child's head.
So that is Elon Musk's past commentary about the run-ins that he's had frequently with the SEC. I can summarize it better than he can because I'm not a billionaire desperately trying to get more sort of fictional, fantastical wealth that doesn't mean anything, but I will do literally anything to get it. I'm just a regular person. So he frequently lies to people. He commits fraud in the open, lying on social media about, you know, moves to take Tesla private, things like that. It's shown that he's lied and he's fined a tiny little fraction of the money he's able to extract from desperate people through his fraud. He's done this with stock prices. He's done this with cryptocurrency. And perhaps now he'll be able to do it with his new venture, because the reason he's our Monday menace is the whole Elon Musk buying Twitter thing. We thought maybe it was dead and it might still be. Literally nothing that comes out, supposedly serious stuff, comments, moves by Elon Musk, should ever be taken at face value because he is a massive, massive self-interested liar. But supposedly he has met with Twitter over the course of this weekend and an agreement could be finalized like right now. Like while we're live on the show, the deal for him to buy Twitter with a whole bunch of the fictional money. And he carved all of the fictional money that he has that doesn't exist and doesn't mean anything, could be used to buy it. And this represents a big change in the position from Twitter. They had previously not been in favor of his supposed offer to buy it out. They had had this poison pill defense that involves if he were to buy it, they'd create all these extra shares. It's a complicated thing, but apparently they're not gonna do it. He says that he has secured the financing to do this. Now, previously he has lied about securing financing for the financial moves he's gonna make. In this case, perhaps it's actually true. And yeah, Francesca, there is every reason to believe that as of later on today, he could be the effective owner of Twitter.
And then we will all boycott, wouldn't we? We would leave en masse, just like we left Facebook and Instagram after the Cambridge Analytica scandal, which turned us all into 1984 lab rats.
Mm-hmm.
No, sadly, that's probably not what's going to happen. Even though I did significantly reduce my time on Facebook, I have like a crushing feeling in my soul about this. And look, Twitter is trash, just like most social media is trash. It's sort of just like, it makes your head hurt instead of your heart hurt. Like Instagram is like making you feel bad about yourself, and Twitter's making you feel bad about like your brain and like the two.
And the world.
And the world, exactly. And they both sort of like, you know, equally attack your mental health. But this is bad. This is awful. And I think the worst part about this is that the right will herald this in and say that it is a win for free speech when it is simply a billionaire buying a company who they think is more favorable to their politics, who they think is a sort of pseudo libertarian, whatever, blah, blah, blah. If it were George Soros, we know how this would go down. And so I think that is what I hate, is the lies around how this will or won't make Twitter better. I understand that Twitter itself doesn't make a lot of money. I realize I'm ping-ponging here, but Twitter doesn't make that much money. They've got ad sales, but that's probably why a lot of us like Twitter, is that it's not just constant ads like a lot of other platforms are. They generally are in the red every single year. And so I see them looking for a way out of that. And my God, does it have to be Musk? Is there another way? Like if the, you know, soccer team in Thailand trapped in a, what was it, a tunnel in a cave? A
cave network, yeah.
Can find their way out. The Twitter can find their way out of this without Elon's help.
Yeah, look, thank you for bringing that up, because just in case there are still any of the people who've made the bizarre life decision to worship Elon Musk of all things, remember he was going to save those kids by making child-sized submarines. And then that ended up into him devolving into attacking the people who actually saved the kids as pedophiles. But you might be getting that mixed up with the fact that he said he was gonna build ventilators during the pandemic and that didn't happen. He was gonna save Ukraine and that didn't happen. He just kind of lies about a lot of stuff. Weird, sort of like a pattern that maybe should inform your decision to worship him of all humans. But anyway, yeah, look, financially, I don't see how it's a good deal. I don't know why these banks would be backing him with all this money when, does anyone believe that Twitter is likely to become more profitable in the future? I don't know. Maybe all of these corporations are valued in ways that make absolutely no sense and have no relationship to reality. So I don't know, you could find out that he buys it and tomorrow it's worth twice as much money. What does that mean in the real world? Absolutely nothing. It doesn't mean anything real. All of these are just digital numbers that they've assigned to things and they get to feel great about themselves. But what I would say is the actual effect that it will have on Twitter will probably be in the immediate term somewhat mild. I mean, terrible people who have purposefully run afoul of the terms of service that they knew about and violated repeatedly will have their accounts returned. Donald Trump probably. And so in a funny enough way, this is actually gonna hurt Truth Social even more. So that's kind of funny. Any faith that you might have for the future that some of the targeted organized harassment campaigns that have driven individuals and groups of people off of Twitter through harassment, no, they're not gonna do literally anything to stop that. They're gonna be throwing fuel in the fire of hate speech and all of that. And that'll pretty much be it. It's still gonna be Twitter. Twitter is kind of bad in a lot of ways. If you are in a certain few career fields, including ours, you're kind of obligated to take part. And other than that, there's still Possum Every Hour. That account is the one good reason to be on Twitter. And that's pretty much it. No, I'm not planning any big boycott because it's awful now and it's going to be awful later. It's just going to be slightly more awful. And he's going to be slightly more awful and more try hard and more cringy. That's what
he's going to be. Yeah, but it also, you know, I think I saw someone lament the old internet and the death of it, like the fact that like the internet was maybe good for like 3 years. And I would agree with that. And I think that in the times of like I used to have a blog where I would post photos of my friends and I, and then Facebook came around, right? And up until that point, not everyone had a camera on their phone. And so you'd have like certain minimally more tech savvy people. It was just, everything was a little bit more independent.
Yeah.
And like having a more independent Twitter like is such a dream. And I hope we get back to that internet one day. But we need to break up big tech, and Elon Musk coming around and swooping in and being the sort of knight in shining armor, that will not do that in any way. We have to remember why people like Donald Trump, why others have been booted from Twitter, because they are directly inciting violence against other users. And this is what led to the election of Trump in the first place. I mean, you've had women and people of color and people of the LGBTQ plus community for years saying, we are routinely harassed, targeted, doxxed on these platforms. What are you going to do about it? And then you've got the loud right wingers and the xenophobes and the hate, you know, the hate bigots, whatever, saying, oh wow, how dare you police us? Because Twitter finally sort of cracked down, finally, when they didn't need Trump anymore. Yeah. And suddenly they're the victim. It's the same playbook that you see literally in everything, in policy. It's all playing out on social media as well.
Yeah, well, and look, so much of the news recently, like I know that there are right wingers that are like, this is great, this is a great development. They have no idea why they think that. They've just been told to think that, and so they think that. They think, oh, I don't like this, these tech billionaires determining our life, so I think Elon Musk should own it. So rather than having some tech billionaires owning it, I think one tech billionaire should own it. Again, it makes a mockery of all of the statements they've, the supposed values that they've had, to think the reason they like it is because it's not a principle. It's, well, you know, as much as we love to pretend that Elon Musk is like an independent thinker or whatever, no, like secretly we think he's really right wing. That's why we like him. That's why all of these supposed independent thinkers all are, they like them because they're right wingers. That's all they are. They've got the you know, lingering idea that maybe they're independent on something. It doesn't actually exist. If they were independent, they wouldn't like them. So, and then, you know, combine that with what's going on with Disney, that, you know, we don't want these damn politicians like weighing in on business. But like if you know, if Disney says something we don't like, or we misinterpret it as something we don't like, we think that politicians should be able to individually target those corporations. Again, they don't have values. These are not values. This is, we like it when it helps us. We don't like it when it doesn't. And we think in these areas, the people with power have our interest. Now, the second con is that you dopes, they don't have your interest. Ron DeSantis doesn't give a damn about you. He doesn't care if you're never able to retire, never able to own a home, if you suffer medical bankruptcy. He's feeding you incredibly shallow, easy to produce tidbits of what he has convinced you want. The culture war BS. And you're gonna be left out alone to die in the cold of winter. And he doesn't care. You think Elon Musk is doing this because he cares so much about free speech? No, in his case, it doesn't have to be hard economics. As I said, this doesn't seem like a good investment. He's just pathetically eager to seem relevant. He desperately wants people to like him.
But he's mad at
about your free speech.
No, and he's mad at the SEC. Like, you started with the SEC thing. Let's remember the SEC, which has gotten on him before for him running up the value of Tesla stock on Twitter and saying, hey bro, you can't do that. That's actually not legal. And Tesla is a public company. And so you're not allowed to do that. Well, what he wants to do to Twitter, which is really interesting, is he gonna take it private or is he gonna keep it public? Is he gonna take it, keep it public, have people sort of artificially run up the stock on it for no reason? Because I'm sure he could dupe a lot of his fanboys into doing so. Or is he gonna take it private, which is almost even more scary, because then there is at least there's no shareholder control, there's no shareholder input, he can do whatever he wants with it. So both avenues are scary, but let's remember, it's because he wants to be relevant, because he wants to stick it to the SEC. If they are private, He does not have to answer to the SEC in the way that he would if it remains public.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I understand I probably waste a lot of time in the show trying to get through to people that are like at their core operating in bad faith. They don't understand why they have the positions they do, and they're not interested in having positions that make sense. But like, I don't understand how you could still at this point think that Elon, like you think that coastal elites, billionaires, they don't understand you, the real conservatives. But for some reason, this coastal elite, this billionaire does. This guy who has frequently, fully in public view, run pump and dump schemes on cryptocurrency that he has made tons of money off of. What do you think happens to all of the people who trust Elon Musk, that have faith in him, they worship him, that are left holding cryptocurrency after it crashes? What happens to them? What happens to their fortunes? When he will announce, fully knowing that like the Cybertruck is not gonna be ready for literally years, he announced it years ago. He gets tons of people who love Tesla, love Elon Musk, to put down their massive deposits on it. That is just a massive interest-free loan for a guy who has hundreds of billions of dollars. And then if, you know, 5 years go by and all of those people have lost that money, they're just waiting desperately for the car to finally come out. Why don't you learn from any of this? He's scamming you fully in public over and over again. He always benefits, you guys lose, but you can't seem to get it. Like nothing Elon Musk does influences my economics one way or another. I got nothing to do with him. I'm just trying to help you, and you guys seem as immune to being able to realize how you're being scammed as you did with Trump. And obviously there's a lot of overlap between those two groups.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts? We've got some spammers going on the chat. I'm gonna have to weed that out. But anyway, regularly. Yeah, exactly. Any other thoughts about this?
No, we've covered it. We're gonna continue to cover it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and by the way, it seems to me to be about as equally likely that later on today, he will literally own Twitter as he's just gonna be back out. Why not? It raised his profile and made people take him seriously for a few days, and then that could be it. And he could just move on to more nonsense. Fun, what? That could happen.
He's gonna also institute really dumb changes, like let's make boob GIFs more readily available. When you type in boobs, I don't see anything.
Yeah, there's a couple of right wingers who are like, John's so worked up, haha. No, but like again, it doesn't affect me. You guys are the ones that are being scammed. What you don't seem to understand is the idea that someone that you disagree with on politics could still care about what happens to you, because that is so not just absent in your political movement, it's the exact opposite of your political movement. Your political movement at its core is just hoping that the people that the elites point to and say those are bad people, and you think, oh good, those are bad people, I just want them to feel bad, I want them to have bad things happen to them. That's not actually at the core of my politics. I actually want everyone to do better. I don't want you to put all of your money into these scams and lose everything and end up losing your homes, losing your businesses. It's a waste of time.
But it's
I'll never get through to a single one of you, but that is what I'm trying to do.
I also think you're hitting on, I think what angers us a lot about Elon Musk is the thirst to be relevant and cool when he's actually just a miserly billionaire that doesn't care, that would rocket to Mars with your own blood right now if he could. He does not care about anybody, but he sort of purports and seems to, oh, I've got all these innovative ideas. No, you've made your money off the backs of your workers, and you like have been at the right place at the right time, including when you were born into an emerald mine dynasty. So like, I think that's the billionaire worship. It's the same reason I think that maybe like people get annoyed at the Kardashians, although I would argue their impact is a lot less than someone like Elon Musk. But it's that like we've lifted up as a society billionaires. I don't know. It's because he's smart. No. It's because he's a billionaire. Stop lying. It's not because he's innovative. It's not because he's smart. Certainly not because he's cool. It's simply because he's rich. And if you, and I think a lot of people don't fully embrace that. And I feel like if folks were a little more upfront, forthcoming about the fact they just like rich people, I might be cooler with the fandom.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the thing where they still pretend like they will go, there will be a person that will just go, they'll spend an hour liking every tweet that Elon Musk puts out. And then they'll go to Tucker Carlson pretending that he's like against the elites. And they'll be like, yeah, screw those elites. You're worshiping elites. You're like, you're loving Elon Musk. You're waiting for Donald Trump to become president again. Like, do you not get the inconsistency there? Apparently you don't. Anyway, with that said, we are gonna go to our first break. We come back, we're going to set our sights to Europe, some electoral results there. So we've got a lot more to get to, but we'll be back after this. I saw in the chat, by the way, Sabrina's like, Sue? Yeah, I know, it's been adjudicated. Nobody likes it. Apparently I'm a big dumb donkey in a suit.
I'm a big dumb donkey in a Jesus. Yeah.
That's what it is. Okay, well, you know what? I'm just trying to be credible because clearly after years, my commentary isn't gonna get me there. This is my last chance. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna turn to maybe our most serious topic that we're gonna be talking about, starting off with this.
Vive la République! Et vive la France! Du 24 avril 2022, une majorité d'entre nous a fait le choix de me faire confiance pour présider notre République durant les 5 années à venir. Je pense aussi à tous nos compatriotes qui se sont abstenus.
So there you have Emmanuel Macron declaring victory. If you're on the podcast, he was doing it in French. They're always speaking French over there. It's like this big thing. But anyway, he has won. The runoff election happened over the weekend. Marine Le Pen and him had been the top two vote getters in the first round. So after a few more weeks of campaigning, because outside of the US, elections are actually fairly concise things. They had their runoff. There was a lot of fear that perhaps the hard right candidate would finally prevail in France. It didn't happen, although we are going to dive into the results to see how terrified we should be of the future for France. Now, Macron is projected to win with 58% of the vote. In the end, he got 58.54% of the vote. These numbers can, they can shift a little bit after the fact, but he did win with a turnout that in the US context would be an overwhelming victory. And it is still a big victory, but there are a few issues with it. One is that turnout was low. Folks did turn out and it was higher, than most US elections. But for French elections, I think I read that it was the lowest turnout they'd had since like 1969. Nice, but not nice for democracy necessarily. Also, in terms of those who went out to vote and voted for Macron, gave him another term rather than switching over and going with the hard right Marine Le Pen. Why did they do that? Well, there was a poll shown. Why did they vote for to block Marine Le Pen from winning was 91% of the vote.
There
because
you go.
He would make a good president, 9%. And that just that hits home, Francesco. What do you think about it?
I mean, if you were to ask American voters the same thing in 2020. And I think obviously we on the left are like, yeah, hell yeah, that's exactly why I voted for Biden. It's why I voted for Hillary. You're welcome. Sorry, it didn't work out and we've got the Electoral College, damn it. But no, when I saw this news, I think nothing but relief. And any day that is bad for Steve Bannon is a good day for the rest of the world. Remember, Marine Le Pen is also part of not only Bannon and Nigel Farage in the UK and the Brexit scheme, but also a Putin allied and friendly authoritarian, right? I mean, CPAC was just announced to be in Budapest. They're all going to be in Budapest. Marine Le Pen's probably going to be there. Bolsonaro's going to be there.
Wait, are you serious?
I'm not even joking. This is going to happen. We should do a story about it. Yeah. So this, make no mistake that we are looking at what is the opposite of the Avengers, but for authoritarians, where they come together and they ruin the world. Macron, however, is not the answer and the solution. So I hope, just like in this country, we need to be pushing Biden. We need to be militantly fighting for things like canceling student debt, for acting on climate change. And I hope that in France, they militantly really make sure to hold Macron's feet to the fire. You can't deny those results. Macron, nobody wants you. Nobody wants you. They just don't want a fascist.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and too many are like, maybe fascism, you know? And I don't know, like obviously there's a lot culturally different and, you know, historically different between the US and France, but I don't know, there seems like less difference than there used to be. And this is a story that is playing out in a lot of Western democracies. Not necessarily, we're not necessarily at the same point in that like renewal of the hard right in all of these countries, but
yeah,
it feels kind of like that. Now they were more successful at stopping it. That's a result that, you know, Joe Biden is never gonna get against a Trump or something like that. But it is a closer election result than we've had in the past. If I could jump ahead a little bit, way back in 2002, we're now talking 20 years ago, Marine Le Pen's father lost a runoff election 82-18. So 5 years ago, Marine Le Pen got 34%. And so, you know, she's up that by like, I don't know, 8 points, something like that. But that's also like a growth of 30% of the vote share. That is a significant change. And we can't be shocked by this. Emmanuel Macron is like, if you programmed a 3D printer and just like, just give me something neoliberal, they would print out Emmanuel Macron. That's basically what it would be. And you know, I'm not an expert on French politics. I'm not gonna pretend that I am, but we've covered enough of the issues with him that have generated massive popular opposition. He seems cut in a very similar, you know, sort of cloth as like a lot of the so-called like moderate centrist Democrats that largely think that it is just enough to be the absence of fascism.
Mm-hmm.
And to not really provide much like to stimulate or inspire voting. And we're seeing that. And by the way, like I don't know if Marine Le Pen will run again or if someone else will pick up the torch for the far right, but
she'll like, run again.
Yeah. So what happens next time? And what happens the time after that? Are we not supposed to care about that at that point?
No, I mean, this is the wake up call that Macron needs. It was the wake up call that Biden needed. And then January 6th sprinkled a little bit of reality on top of that or unreality. And here we are going into the midterms. We haven't dropped any amount of student debt. We haven't gotten the Build Back Better plan, his signature campaign slogan turned into policy. Yeah. None of that passed. And pretty much no other bold legislation on any of that. So it's very, very difficult. You're like, okay, so we're walking right back into the mouth of the fascists. We're handing back the torch because we're too tired of holding it with our weak little, you know, neoliberists. Owie, it's hot. Yeah. So I think, you know, France might be in a similar situation. I hope not. And I know that there was a third Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who did incredibly well in the first rounds of that of the presidential race. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that he continues to build. And he was a leftist candidate or more progressive candidate, which is pretty easy to do when compared to Macron. So, and I hope Macron, I mean, I heard him in that speech he played. It sounds like he's about to wag his finger at the people who don't vote, which is exactly what happens in this country. Every time people don't vote, who doesn't turn out? It's young people and people of color, people who do not see their values and their like what they want to vote on reflected anywhere in power. And so they don't vote. Yeah. And then we just browbeat them as if that's going to work. They didn't listen to enough NPR. It's like, no, man, you have to give people a reason to vote.
Yeah, or whatever the French equivalent is. Yeah, 100%. And the issue is that we keep getting wake up calls, but they keep hitting the snooze because it's in their financial interest and more importantly, the financial interest of the people that have chosen them for that position to not do anything. And you know, look, obviously, there's a lot of money to be made and audience to be generated by needlessly and counterproductively simplifying things. One of the reasons I personally will never be popular is that I refuse to do that. So it is a combination of a couple of things. One, it is weakness. There are things I'm sure that Biden on the one hand, and maybe Macron there would like to do and they can't do. But at the same time, complicating it is a little bit of, there ain't that much they really wanna do. Because again, it's a different flavor of what we talk about when we talk about the right and why they do what they do while campaigning and governing.
Mm-hmm.
How much urgency would you feel to take big political risks if the people that you're backing are already doing really well economically. And fundamentally, the status quo is quite appealing to them. So it's a combination of weakness and lack of will that the people that they're backing, there might be some things around the periphery they'd like to do, but it's not the same as what is driving the progressive movement in any way. And so complicated, but you know, that's what's going on. Yeah. And by the way, there's going to be further elections in France in terms of the lower levels and all that. So we have to see that could influence what Macron does, but we'll see that when it happens.
Yeah.
Let's move to something very different. Let's talk a little bit about that energy on the progressive side, starting with this.
If you can go to space, you can give our workers a bathroom break. Ain't that right? If you can go to space, you can make sure that you're treating people well and giving them solid health care benefits. That they don't have a 3-hour commute to and from work. That they can afford the house that they can live in. That people don't have to be sleeping in their cars in order to work for Amazon. All of this is an indignity and an injustice, and it has no place in New York City. And we're going to change that. And right here, our workers out here are going to change that.
That is footage from a big rally that happened over the weekend in advance of another Amazon unionization vote. You saw in that video, Chris Smalls, the organizer for Amazon Labor, AOC and Bernie Sanders as well. They were visiting Amazon workers in New York just a day before ballots would begin to be cast in another spot that's seeking to unionize. Actually, I believe it's directly across the street from the site of the successful vote that happened not long ago. By the way, Sanders is speaking right before leaving to travel to Richmond, Virginia to talk with Starbucks workers who've begun Amazon organizing coffee shops at Starbucks as well. So a busy organizing weekend for Bernie. I want to give you a little bit more of what AOC had to say about where she wants to see this movement go in this.
We're going to make sure that they go all the way. Contracts, and if they want $100 million tax breaks from the state, well, they got to do their end of the deal too. All right, so we're out here to support them. We're out here to make sure that we've got our workers' backs, because again, New York City is a union town, and we're not going to stop until United States of America is union made. So thank you all so much.
So now, as we're filming this, the voting is going on. This is at the LDJ5 facility. There are 1,500 Amazon workers there eligible to vote. And it might possibly create like an amazing 1-2 punch in that area in the fight to unionize this massive employer. We'll have to see. As we know, not all of these are a lock, especially at Amazon. There was the issues at Bessemer and all that. Mm-hmm. But this is potentially the next step in that effort. And so it's awesome to see it, Francesca.
Yeah, no, and I think it's obviously really, really important that people like Bernie Sanders and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez are out there. I'm still not convinced that had they been there sooner, that this vote would have gone through. We know what happens when all eyes turn to one location and the media starts to pay attention. Sometimes flying under the radar, that can be a good thing. It can be a good thing to just focus on the task at hand and not make it a giant sort of media spectacle. I know AOC was quote unquote called out by Christian Smalls, by others for not being there. I have a little bit of a bone to pick with that personally. I think AOC was one of the people who was most pivotal in making sure that Amazon didn't move its entire HQ to New York, which would have done irreparable harm, not just in terms of workers' rights and just how they sort of spawn exploitation, but in terms of housing, mm-hmm. in terms of, and that coupled with Eric Adams, can you guys effing imagine what that would have been like? So I think AOC and Bernie have been some of the people the most on the front lines. The fact that this particular unionization effort, they weren't out in front on. Sometimes you're not gonna be out on front in it, and thank God that Christian Smalls is out there, because what a leader he is, as is are so many others. So yeah, I'm super pumped about this.
Agreed. We want, obviously we want as many politicians as possible. They're gonna help to raise the profile, provide support, all that. But we also know that is something that will help. What you need is a broad base of organizers. And that's what that's what they've done. Obviously, Chris Smalls and other organizers have done absolutely amazing work. Super quick note, just because I've seen a lot of people note it in the chat. This is the least important part of this entire story. But yes, I love his jacket too, and I want one of them. But anyway, it was an Eat the Fridge jacket. It was pretty cool. Anyway, that's the least important part of this. I don't want to focus too much on that because I would rather talk about what they said, what they're trying to accomplish, because the speech of AOC, and we're going to read a little bit of what Bernie Sanders has to say. Let's not forget that this is just the latest in many, many appearances by both of them in support of a ton of different labor actions, including recently, including in that area. They are continuing to do that, which I think is what is important. Now, AOC went on to say, we have another election tomorrow. That is today, by the way, and we're going to support them in that, and the day after that, and the day after that, all the way. But what we need Amazon to do first and foremost is to recognize the union that won their election, talking about the previous effort. And so that hasn't happened yet. But what has happened is that Chris Smalls says that he has been approached by workers at more than 100 other Amazon facilities expressing interest in unionization. I hope he's got a lot of support, because I don't even know how you start to pursue that much. But that is awesome. And Amazon, for their part, they're still fighting it. So like, it's one of the things when the vote went through, we want to congratulate the workers and we want to celebrate it, but we also don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, because Amazon is there. They put a bunch of money into fighting it. They try to dissuade their workers in some legal ways and some illegal ways from unionizing. And as of right now, they're still trying to get a court to overturn it. And so we don't know exactly how this is going to go, but continuing the effort in as many facilities as possible, making it as high profile an issue as possible, not only helps those workers, but also helps to inspire workers to unionize other companies. It helps to inspire regular people who might not have thought a lot about unionization, or might have grown up in a time when basically everything you hear growing up about unions is coming from people who absolutely despise them. And so you're brought up to think that it's a big waste of your time and money. And so all of this, I think, helps to fight back against decades of basically free anti-union propaganda that's just been out there ambient in the environment.
And I just want to turn everyone's attention to read Ryan Grimm's new piece in The Intercept, which talks about the importance of Biden's NLRB head, Jennifer Abruzzo, who, because of her rulings on labor issues of late, that these Amazon workers had a lot more leeway than NLRB's in the past, and then that situations in the past. So the importance of, although he has failed in so many ways, that a Democrat's appointment of a head of the NLRB can do things like enable workers to organize with inside the facilities rather than only be on the outside of them. That's huge. So these are small changes that have big, big ripple effects. And thankfully, Joe Biden, he said Amazon and Bessemer by name. It's the one issue that he's been minimally better on than obviously than Republicans, but then even on former Democrats as well. So everyone check that article out.
100%. I mean, and he could be much better on it. I mean, one of the supposed appeals of Biden was that he was the sort of guy that maybe would be a little bit more involved in this. And you're right. And you, by the way, are going out of your way to give him credit. There is still obviously much more that he could do.
Yeah.
That said, we're going to take our second break. When we come back, I just want to have a little bit of fun. Some absolutely insane video coming out of a Trump rally. We're going to break that down and then reveal what's been discovered about Carrie Lake, who might be Arizona governor soon. Some fascinating stuff after this. Okay, everybody, it's about to get weird. Let's jump into this.
Had to give the American people their voice back by building something called Truth Central. No more Dropbox. The drop boxes are just so bad. No more drop boxes. The elimination of Zuckerberg Dropbox. I call them the unlock boxes. You know, they call them lock boxes. I call them unlock boxes.
I call it a micro seizure. What is going on with you, man? And also, I gotta admit, like, we'll get to the True Central thing. John, you've got Trump derangement syndrome, which I do. I oppose anything that he opposed. So now I'm pro Drockbach. I want a Drockbach in every pot, actually, is what I
want. Drockbach. I'm waiting for a Drockbach sponsorship.
I know, exactly. I'd like 1 month free to Drockbach. He was experiencing some significant.
Do you know the song by the B-52s, Drockboxer? Great song.
I don't know. And so look, we know from the news last week that Joe Biden could be running again. And if he did and he got elected, he'd be 82. I just want you to bear in mind, these are potentially the two options. God. They are falling apart before our very eyes. They're gonna end up in a pine drop box, I'm worried, as candidates. But anyway, that video did start with Trump being unfamiliar with what the name of his new social media company is, but he does have some good news for fans of True Censure in this.
A mess, but Truth Social phone users can download the app today and get their voices back. And it's open and ready to go and go out and use it and have fun with it. And non-iPhone users are coming very, very soon to make Truth Social a free speech alternative to big tech platforms. Our team is working around the clock and has recently enabled every single person on the wait list to join the platform. A lot of people are on the wait list. Now you can join. As of last night, I think at 10 o'clock.
He sounded so much like the new guy on SNL who does it right there. But anyway,
James Austin Johnson has him down pat, like the non sequitur. Who's talking about Dropbox? Why are we talking about Dropbox?
Now he's got me doing it. What is the problem with Dropbox? All it does is sync your files. I have no problem with it.
Like, are you easy invested in like Apple Cloud or
Google Drive?
Like what?
I don't know. But anyway, it is so weird to see him. The effort he will put into things versus the effort he won't. So there, he's like trying to convince a crowd to download his dumb app and lying about that they've fixed all their problems and everything, but he won't post on it. Dude, okay, maybe that's too much. You know, like I in theory could do Snapchat, but I don't want to have to do another app. It's hard enough to keep up with the ones that I do. But you're a billionaire. Just hire people to pretend to be you on, and they can post on True Censure or Dropbox or whatever.
True Censure.
It requires more effort not to do it at this point. And it is being felt by his fans. They're not using the app. Like Devin Nunes every week now goes on the news and lies about how Truth Social has more activity than Twitter. It's not true. And now the news is even worse for him. Elon Musk is buying Twitter. So now I guess that's a paradise for right wingers. Why would they go on Truth Social at this point?
Well, they're gonna pivot. They're gonna be also a studio. And it'll be a streaming platform and service. Mm-hmm. And we will have access to Don Jr.'s cameos for everyone who's a subscriber. Automatic cameos, especially on your birthday. He will do an extra line and sing the happy birthday song. All of them.
Maybe. People are saying maybe he was talking about voting drop boxes. But that's even like he was not close to saying Dropbox. He was farther from talking about actual Dropboxes. But who knows, honestly? I'm sure the audience was just as confused as we were. One of the reasons they might have been confused, you're gonna get a little bit of a clue too as we launch into this video.
Over the world. You know, they used to call me JD. They said maybe stupid. So I said to Doc Ronnie, you know, Doc Ronnie is now a great congressman in Texas. Great, very popular guy. I think he won by like 52 points or something. But he's now a great congressman. I said, Ronnie, I don't like when people call me stupid. I had great heritage, an uncle who was a great, great genius, a father who was a genius. Everybody, we have a lot of geniuses. I don't like being called stupid. Is there a test or something I can take to prove to these radical left maniacs that I'm much smarter than them? Is there a test? And he said, sir, there is a test. It's called the X test. I said, what's it like? He said, well, it gets very tough. The first questions are easy and the middle of the test gets tough and the end of the test is quite tough.
There's no X test. That's how you train with Wolverine is the X. It's the Montreal Cognitive Assessment. We're not going through all of it again. Like, because my willingness to fact check has been so chipped away by the apparent inability of anyone to learn anything ever. It is a test to do sort of like an early warning signs assessment for people who are experiencing cognitive decline. That's all it is. Can you remember words a moment later? Can you draw a clock? There are things to be able to test to see if people's minds are slipping due to dementia and other things like that. That's all it is.
And I aced the test. What's
if
it called?
If you can't remember the name of the test, you might have failed the test.
No, but I did very well.
He did so well. It's so hard. We've gone through all the questions. The last five, not tough at all. And so when he says something like that, I have to imagine some potential worlds. What could have produced this? Either that is actually what happened, that he went to Ronnie Jackson and said, I don't like it when they call me stupid. Can you prove I'm smart? And the dude had him take a dementia warning test. Or that he's lying about all that, which is sadder and even weirder. So I don't know which is true. It is weird for him to be going on. Yes, it's the person, woman, man, camera, TV thing. It has been literally years. And he's still using that as evidence that his mind isn't just like sweet potato mush at this point.
Drop bop.
That's what it is. Dude, we're listening to you speak. I don't care about the test he took a couple of years ago. I'm listening to you speak and you got some issues, bud.
I wonder what people in the audience, like do his fans fill in the, I think that's what you do. You fill in the words and string them together and you're like, that's a perfectly fine sentence. I just filled it in, you know, it's like a Mad Libs, but you're just like pedophile, mm-hmm. Q, dark force, you know, and you just string Road it together. Boy. Exactly. Yeah, he speaks like that on purpose so that then later we can decipher it using the special code.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, I want to move to something more substantive because he might be in charge of this stuff. Let's jump into this video.
So what would you do right now in Ukraine if you were the president?
Putin uses the N-word. I call it the N-word. He uses the N-word, the nuclear word, all the time. That's a no-no. You're not supposed to do that. He uses it on a daily basis. And everybody's so afraid. And as they're afraid, he uses it more and more. That's why he's doing the kind of things he's doing.
He's doing
them because he thinks nobody's going to ever attack us because they're all stupid and they're afraid to talk about it.
I totally agree with you.
Okay, see, they're getting along, apparently. Anyway, that's Piers Morgan talking to Donald Trump. Donald Trump speaking about what's going on in Ukraine. And Piers Morgan is trying to get him to say what he would do. And here's the thing, was that answer laughable? Was it ridiculous that he's trying to get the N-word to now mean nuclear? Yes, but he also could be in charge of our foreign policy. That war could still be going on when he becomes president again. So it would be nice to know what he would actually do. Piers Morgan tries with a follow-up question.
Okay.
So what'd you do?
And instead of, excuse me, it's a little complicated.
I'm sorry.
Instead of, you know, kowtowing, instead of Biden saying, oh, he's got nuclear weapons. He keeps saying he's got we have better weapons. We have the greatest submarine power in history.
So what would you say and do?
I would say we have far more than you do, far, far more powerful than you. And you can't use that word ever again. You cannot use the nuclear word ever again. And if you do, we're going to have problems.
Now, look, when Donald Trump acts like literally like a 3-year-old that's just discovered what politics is, that can be funny or whatever. He is, of course, talking about nuclear brinksmanship with Vladimir Putin. And the weird obsession with you're not gonna use the word is so bizarre. And he doesn't answer the question, by the way. We have no idea what his policy would be in regard to Ukraine, other than, I guess, threatening Russia with nuclear retaliation. I guess that's what we're hearing there, Francesca.
Yeah, this is a game of battleship to him. That's all he thinks is, I got a bigger one, a kush, boosh. Like, he thinks they're in a sandbox. That's where his mind is at, and that's where he's at. And it's so funny because this whole time I've been thinking, you know, man, maybe, and this is what Trump will have you think, right? That, like, oh, Putin would never do this if he were president. Obviously, that's BS. He would have invaded Ukraine even earlier and even worse, and the US would have done nothing. But you're also like, what's more volatile than like friends? It's people who are like authoritarian friends who could easily turn on one another in a heartbeat. So anyway,
exactly. It's scary stuff. Hopefully we won't have to experience it. But as of right now, like, Biden, he's not doing what's necessary to stop that guy from getting reelected. Anyway, thank you everyone. We've got more coming up on the other side of this break.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.